Mayday, mayday, mayday. It's the Popmatic Podcast, and we're going down. Mayday, mayday, mayday. Why is it that the International Radio Distress Signal is the same as the International Workers' Holiday? Why is that? Do you know why?
It's a thinker.
I don't know. So here on the show with me today are...
Bill Chamberlain.
Crystal Dean.
Just Amanda.
And I'm Brian, and I do know why, because I looked it up today, but I'm not going to say why. Someone can leave it in the show notes why that is. We are kind of short today. Clint is not here. I was going to call him the Boba Fett of the Popmatic Podcast, and he's not here. So
it was a good day for that, then.
You're one of those nerdy aliens that just have the cameo in the bar scene. You could have been Boba Fett, Mr. Clint, but you're not here. That's why the sound is bad, too, because he's not here manning the multi-million dollar studio that we have here.
Jesse has become Zach Galifianakis' stand-in, right?
Jesse has become the cactus or the fern, I believe.
Yes.
So today we're going to talk about British television, which is far more superior to Icelandic television or maybe internet TV shows. I don't know. Is British comedy better than Between Two Ferns? We'll address that. And we'll also see what's tickling our team of grumbling experts' fancy at the end of the show. But first, what's happening at the library in May? Bill, do you know about a movie that's happening in May?
As a matter of fact, I do. Nice segue. Come to the movies at Maine, May 12th at 2 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library on 615 Church Street in the Maine Auditorium to see The Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid, written and directed by that Fog City maverick, Philip Kaufman. This movie tells the story of Jesse James and Cole Younger. Now, I know what you're thinking. Bill, I've seen movies before about Jesse James. Well, not quite like this. As the tagline states, the West as it really was. The movie stars Cliff Robertson and Robert Duvall. Also check out our Legends of Filmmakers interview with writer and director of The Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid, Philip Kaufman. It was really great. I would ask him a question and he would simply philosophize. So hope to see you May 12th, 2 p.m. at the Downtown Public Library to see The Great Northfield, Minnesota Raid. See it on our big screen, and it's free. Was I able to say Northfield, Minnesota Raid enough in the people you, get that's the movie we're showing?
Yes, yes. So what else did Philip Kaufman direct or write?
The White Dawn, The Right Stuff, The Unbearable Lightness of Being. He was also the original writer and director of the Outlaw Josie Wales. That was kind of a sticky point in the interview. He got fired. He still has writing credits.
Which, that's one of the better Clint Eastwood westerns, in my opinion.
Movie, and you'll have to listen to the interview to get the facts.
What I wanted to get out of you was that he directed The Wanderers, too. Which
and
is
The Wanderers.
Guilty favorite of mine.
We talk a great deal about The Wanderers.
Excellent. We got to do like a double feature, like a Walter Hill, a Philip Kaufman double feature, where we showed The Warriors and The Wanderers, like back to back. Both came out in 1979.
I'm down. I'm for it.
We got to make that happen. But you know what's happening the day after that?
No.
Sissy Spacek is going to be at the library giving a talk.
Way
and signing
cool.
books. I know. And I saw that. I was like, holy crap. That's exciting.
I know who she is, so that's exciting.
Yeah, she's really a good actress. And I believe she's promoting her autobiography, so that's why she's in town. And she'll probably be here doing the book talk thing, and that's really exciting.
Be snacks?
That's May, yeah.
It's Mother's Day, right?
That is Mother's Day.
So bring your mother to see Sissy Spacek.
Exactly.
And you can nicely.
Ask her a question about Carrie. She was in Carrie, right?
Right.
We've discovered in the course of doing these podcasts, I sort of have false memory syndrome.
You do makeup stuff and you do
Yeah, so I don't really know. Like, Sissy Spacek was in Carrie, right? That was her. Okay. Yeah, you could ask, with your mother, you could ask her about that movie. So, anyway. Or Coal Miner's Daughter, hey, whatever. Or more recent movies. It's not just
the
seminal roles.
Right. Great Sissy Spacek performance.
I'd ask her about Three Women. That's just me.
Or Badlands. Yeah. Or Prime Cut.
Well, Clint isn't here, so I'm not going to let any Terrence Malick be into the podcast. He's not here. Your directors don't get to be talked about. Okay. Anyway, so what dates the movie?
May 12th.
Say the title again.
The Great Norsefield, Minnesota Raid, May 12th, 2 p.m., Downtown Public Library.
And then the next day, May 13th, 2 p.m., come see Sissy Spacek. Man, our library is, like, cool. All right, so we're going to talk about BBC shows, our favorite British television. And this came up because we often mention British TV shows on the podcast. And we're like, well, why don't we just do a whole show dedicated to them? And Clint said, well, no, I don't think we should do a podcast just dedicated to them because we talk about them all the time anyway. But Clint isn't here today, so we're going to talk about them today. Also, I'm just sorry, man. You bailed on me at the last minute, so I'm rubbing it in. The other thing was the success of Downton Abbey, right, which is super duper popular, definitely sort of like the Mad Men of this year. But guess what I learned today, other than the May Day thing? That Downton Abbey isn't actually a BBC show. It's not produced by the BBC, but it's shown.
It's aired on
the BBC. There's a British film company in PBS. It's a co-production. So I guess that shoots that intro. Just erase it. You hear that sound, guys? That's Clint erasing my entire intro. Okay. But, okay, so Crystal, you often fuel the BBC fire here. What you got today?
Well, I have talked about a lot of BBC shows, particularly sketch comedies, you know.
What does BBC stand for?
The British Broadcasting Company. Yes. And so, if you've listened to our podcast, you know that I'm a big fan of The Mighty Boosh. I think I've mentioned Fawlty Towers before, Doctor Who briefly perhaps. But today I wanted to particularly mention a favorite situation comedy of mine called Black Books, which is relevant because it's a bookshop. And it ran for 3 seasons in the early 2000s. It was created by Dylan Moran, who plays the star character Bernard Black, who owns Black Books. And lots of funny stuff happens. He actually hates customers. He doesn't like to sell books. He likes to smoke and drink and sit and read.
So this is a show about libraries?
It's about a bookshop.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry.
Easily confused. That's okay.
Oh, sorry.
Smoking, drinking, reading. No. So Bernard is friends with Fran, who owns the shop, the Gifty Nifty, that is next door. And so on their breaks, they come and they drink wine together and just talk about life or whatever. And so Bernard has some problems with his taxes. And in the very first episode, he goes to his accountant, and his accountant is chased down by the cops. And so now he has no one to do his accounts. And the first episode, he hires Manny, who is played by Bill Bailey. So Manny joins his shop to help run it and do his accounts. And so there's just lots of funny little things that happen, and it's pretty dark in a lot of ways. And I like the fact that it's set in a bookshop because bookshops are closing, and so it sort of makes me feel nostalgic for going to a bookstore. And so, yeah, Black Books.
Someone told me once that I remind them of the lead character. I didn't really see it either, but a little bit. But I always felt too that in some way that he was kind of like based on Neil Gaiman, like he stole Neil Gaiman's look. We always talk about Neil Gaiman, but the way that he looks, you know, and his hair and everything. Have you ever thought that? No, you can say no.
No.
What?
But that's an interesting observation.
Was that a leading question?
I mean, I've never seen you tell patrons here, shoot, get out. I don't want you here. Get out, get out.
Or refuse to check out a book to them just on the way they look.
Well, that's the new policy. What do you got, Bill?
Oh, I want to talk about Cracker. No, not the Telly Savalas sidekick on Kojak, but I'm talking about the British crime drama called Cracker, starring Robbie Coltrane. Now, most of you will probably know him from Hagrid, the character he plays in the Harry Potter series. Robbie Coltrane stars as Eddie Fitzgerald, a criminal psychologist. Cracker first appeared on the scene in the early 90s on the A&E Network. Ah, yes, the A&E Network, when it still had a soul. This was before Dog the Bounty Hunter, Storage Wars, Hoarders, and Billy the Exterminator contaminated the airwaves. But I digress. Cracker was a drama series created by Jimmy McGovern, who also wrote the film Priest, if you remember that, in the early 90s.
I do. It was a great movie.
And at the center of Cracker, created by Jimmy McGovern, he is a true anti-hero, chain smoker, heavy drinker, womanizer, gambler, but brilliant in giving the police insight into the criminal mind. I find the series to be engrossingly good, and unlike most crime series, it has a bit of an edge to it. So we do have copies of it in the library. Highly encourage you to check it out.
Do you think that there's any difference between, like, British and American crime? Like, their approach is any different?
Well, it's funny. I was reading, preparing for this. This has a similar structure to Columbo. It starts out with the crime, and you see, you know who's done it. But in this episode, it's like the in Cracker, he's trying to get the crime of why he did it. You know, he's dealing with psychotics in this particular. Always entertaining, always, like I said, engrossing. I think there was even an episode where Robbie Coltrane did an impersonation of Peter Falk in one of the episodes as Columbo. But the difference is, like I said, it has a bit of an edge. And also, in these, there's also the supporting characters. And the series really got dark because there was a female detective who got raped. There was a policeman who got killed right in, you know, middle of the series, one of the main players. So I don't want to scare anybody off, but it's a little darker than, as you say, the Columbos. Not that I'm knocking Columbo, but this was just, you know, I remember watching the first episode, and it was just, he was giving a lecture in class, and he was just, you know, boorish. He was taking textbooks and throwing them at the students, saying it was all crap and all this stuff. But the thing about it, it's Robbie Coltrane. It's his show. He makes it, you know, appealing. You know, you just want to watch because of him.
So you like Columbo, but you don't like Dog the Bounty Hunter?
I don't. No, I'm afraid not.
Okay, sorry. Amanda, what do you got?
I don't watch
British
TV.
Oh, you don't watch British TV. I forgot.
I'm not cool. Like, I just have basic cable.
I don't have cable at all. But I get my British TV from the library.
That's true. That's a good point.
Yeah. But speaking of things being darker, what I wanted to talk about was Torchwood, which I touched on before. And you might recall that my endorsement of it was like, well, there's things that are bad about it, but it's set in Wales and has these other things about it that are nice. But then I got to the third season, which should be on order by the time this is posted from the library. And it actually got really dark on the third season. And some of the sort of comic book goofiness was like just totally eliminated. And it was just 5 episodes and it got really dark and really intense. It was really brilliant and amazing. And I think one of the ways that British TV is better is, like, they know when to cut their series off short. Like, they don't, like, let things go on and on, like X-Files.
Absolutely.
And Battlestar Galactica and name a show, right? That's the one you went for too long, right? So they seem to be willing to just let a series go for a few seasons, right, and then cut it short. And then I think that really helped Torchwood. It just got really, really super dramatic and intense. It was about, like, you know, if the government had to make decisions about how to save the human race from aliens, like, it was very realistic, kind of like the first couple of seasons of Battlestar Galactica that were really genuinely intense.
Is Torchwood, do they have shorter, like, amount of episodes per season, too?
The first few seasons were not. They were just normal TV episodes with quite a few, like, more than 10, like, in each. But then this third season, which actually is called Torchwood Children of Earth, is just a 5-episode miniseries, and it's really super tight. And I would make jokes about libraries, but one of the other themes in Torchwood Children of Earth is that how people view government employees, how they dislike them, and don't, like, the love-hate relationship with civil service workers is really great. And then, two, I touched on Jack, the big hero in the series, the leader of the Torchwood team, his sort of polysexuality. He'd lived 1,000 lives in 1,000 different galaxies, right? He'd go on a date with anyone. Well, there's a love story between him and Yanto. One of the Torchwood members, like, really gets involved in it intense by the end, and that was good. You didn't really learn a lot about Yanto, but then by that third season, you learn a lot about him, and it was really good. He's also, I think I like it too, he's Welsh, from like Welsh council housing, and all the hooligans in Yanto's old like Welsh council houses play a big part in the movie. I enjoyed that a lot. And I think that you could probably just watch this as a 5-episode miniseries, like as a science fiction miniseries, and you would get it.
Not having watched the first and second series.
If you did watch the beginning, I think there would be more there if you watched the first two seasons. The same thing, I think you would get a little bit more if you watched Doctor Who than if you hadn't watched it, but it's still really good. But it being shorter and working better brings me back to one of like my all-time favorite BBC series, which was the British version of The Office. And what I really loved about that series was it was really short. It just stopped. It didn't go on forever for years and years. And the tone of... I guess I should time out and go back a little bit. For those of you who don't know, the American version of The Office, which has probably gone on for too long, considering that the boss, the big lead character star of the show, has left, right? You know, that's usually what happens to American shows. So the American sitcom The Office is based on the British sitcom The Office. And the boss, the evil boss or the stupid boss in the British version was Ricky Gervais, and I think that was actually the series that introduced him to the world at large. Also, everyone says, I don't like anything, right? I don't like anything. Anything's good. And I love the love story in the British version of The Office. And the love story ending is like the best love story ending on any TV show that I can think of that ends positively in a satisfying narrative way. Can I get a second?
Oh,
come on. Have you seen that? You
watched it? I've tried to watch it. It creeped me out.
Yeah.
I don't want to spoil, but doesn't she move to Florida?
Oh, you have the ending confused.
Oh.
Yeah, okay. So like... if
I must not have watched until the end.
Yes. I was going to say, if you watch Series 1, Series 2, and then you got to watch the holiday special.
Okay.
Because that's like, it's like a 2-hour movie that's like caps the whole series. You know, and like it creeped you out probably because the tone is different. It's very documentary style, like they're inside the office, right?
Doesn't it make you just feel like you're at work too much?
Yeah,
that's kind of where I come down.
You have enough of that at work. Yeah.
Like I have 8 hours out of day, I'm good.
So I was gonna pick on Christopher not liking Merlin. Now, I know Amanda, you don't like the British version of The Office. You've tried it before.
I haven't watched either version of it. I just don't like the. I've watched a little bit of it, and yeah. I've watched like 2 episodes of The American, and I didn't really get into either, so.
Well, the British version, for me too, it took a while for me to get into it. But once I stuck with it, it was totally worth it.
I've heard that it's the British version, and if you watch either, the British one is the one to watch. That's what I've heard, but I have not gone down either road.
I think the American version, and I'm going to make another comparison here, but like the American version is like there's too many sight gags. You know what I mean? Mm. It's too goofy, where... The British version is definitely all about realism, but it's a little bit surreal. And that the way it's shot, too, it's shot like with, it feels like it's shot with like a handheld digital camera in office. So it's just, the feel of it is very different. Because the other British sitcom that always gets recommended to me a lot is The IT Crowd.
Oh, I was just going to say, that's another one of my favorite, like, work situation comedies.
And I've tried The IT Crowd, but... for me, it's just, like, it's too goofy. Like, there's too many, like, sight gags, right? It's too, like, way over the top. So what I liked about The Office was it was a little bit toned back. But those are the, like, contemporary favorites. Do we have classic favorites?
Oh, Fawlty Towers.
I second that, yeah.
Okay, am I stealing your thunder?
No, please, go ahead, yeah.
Oh, it's just, once again, this was airing on the BBC. I remember I was living in Columbus at the time, Ohio, and... I knew about it, and lo and behold, there it was. And it's takes place in an inn with a Basil. Is his name Basil Fawlty?
Basil Fawlty.
And his wife
Sybil,
and who's the I should know him. Manuel, and it's you know they've done documentaries on this, or a documentary during, you'll probably see it again during fundraiser week, but it's so funny that set, everything was on it was so cheap. And the sets, you know, you can even see when the door slams, you can see the whole wall shakes and all this stuff. But, I mean, it's the writing and the core performances. It is so funny. And, like, how there were only, like, six of them done or
12?
12. Is it? Hilarious. Every one of them is gold. And it was going back to what you said. John Glee said that's the proudest thing because him and his wife,
Connie
Booth, would just, you know, sit down and write these shows. And the thing he was most proud of, that they only did these certain amount of shows, but they're all hilarious and they're gold. And they also tried to do an American version of that with Bea Arthur in the John Cleese role, which it failed miserably. It didn't last any time at all. But anyway, you know, and like you're saying, it doesn't go on and on. It's worth checking out or even buying the sucker because it's things you can watch over and over again. Like if you're in suicidal despair, pop that into the DVD, it'll snap you right out of it.
If you're in suicidal despair, do not watch the BBC version of The Office because that'll probably be the end.
But watch Fawlty Tower.
You'd be like, oh, yeah, this is why I was depressed in the first place.
Yeah, they're so fresh, even now.
Yeah.
You know, you watch an episode and the comedy is just still so funny.
And so this was, what was it, done like the 70s? And it's still, lingers, you know. It's just, they're just great stuff.
You want to talk about The Prisoner? Are we just going to let The Prisoner go?
Well, we can talk about The Prisoner.
Do you like The Prisoner?
Oh, I remember when it first aired when I was a little, you know, and it was strange. Well, it still is, but, you know, what is this? You know, I was too young. Well, still I don't understand it, but it's, yeah, I mean, Patrick McGoohan was a favorite of mine, and Secret Agent Man, I remember watching those shows growing up, and that was sort of like a continuation. And once again, how many episodes? Just one season, like 18 or...
Yeah.
But he wanted to cut it down to 12. But they said, well, you needed to, you know, when he pitched the idea, said, well, we need more than that for a full season.
So if those of you aren't familiar, The Prisoner is about a man who wakes up inside a sort of like fantasy island type scenario, but then he realizes he's actually trapped. And then it kind of reminds me of Lost in some ways, in the sense that it just keeps getting more and more convoluted and more bizarre as he tries to escape.
Yeah.
So there's really nothing else like The Prisoner. It was probably on TV.
No.
Maybe Twin Peaks. Yeah. Maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know, but even The Prisoner, I think, was more overtly like fantasy and surreal than Twin Peaks or Lost.
And also, I found this one day skipping around on YouTube. There is Patrick McGoohan rarely did interviews about any of his shows. He just did the work and went home, and he got invited to some place, and he was speaking about The Prisoner, and it's about these, it's just, I think you can type in Patrick McGoohan, The Prisoner, you know, and it's just this really interesting artifact that they taped in New York years ago.
If we can find it, I'll link to it.
Yeah.
In the show notes.
And they also, one other thing he did, we were shocked, he was on one of the episodes of The Simpsons. And where he was getting away on, I think Homer says, why don't you get away on the raft? Why didn't I think of that? And Patrick McGoohan was doing the voice. And it was just kind of unusual because he didn't like talking about it. And he didn't talk about his work and stuff. He once said he lived in Palm Springs where he said celebrities are a dime a dozen and people would leave him alone. So,
so I'm going to break a taboo here and I'm going to ask a question that I think might be on everyone's mind. Or it's just the fact that I'm a space cadet, but don't BBC shows, whether they're from the 60s or 70s now, like, don't they look different? Don't they have, like, a different look?
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that that's true?
Yeah, they would implement handheld cameras, things of that nature.
And you think that's why?
Well, it's just, that's an example.
Or do you think I've often wondered if I just have some weird psych thing where I'm like, well, this is from a different country, then I think it looks there. I don't have that same thing if I watch foreign films. But it seems like even like Torchwood, it looked.
Do you think it looks different, like more real, or do you think it like more like real life, or do you think it looks more?
I think it has something to do like technically with the camera or the film stock or something, but Torchwood was probably shot digitally. I don't think it was probably shot on film.
Well, because, see, I watched Footballers' Wives, which we don't have anymore. We used to. And I thought it looked like reality TV. Like, I thought it looked really, like, it wasn't shot on film and it wasn't, you know, edited. Yeah. And I thought it looked more like real life. And I didn't know. I just thought maybe that was the show. I hadn't gone that far with it.
But even when I watched, like, classic Doctor Who, now there's one show that they probably did for, like, way too long. But they took a break and they rebooted and it got better, right? Right?
Sure.
Did you say yes, Crystal?
Indeed.
You should disagree with me. You should attack me on that Merlin issue. Cast some spell on me. Merlin is great. I just think that they look different. I don't know why. I don't know. I'll let it go.
I just I don't think about that, but, I mean, you could be right. It could be something that intuitively I just enjoy more because I find myself drawn to British television series way more than American TV. Anymore.
Yeah. Well, American TV is Dog the Bounty Hunter.
Borders.
All right. I mean, I think the last good American TV show was Mad Men, and I don't like that now.
I don't.
Yeah, I never
got the point.
I gave
Mad
up
Man.
After, two or three seasons.
I mean,
of
the
Mad.
Way
Sorry,
they go
Karen,
on
if
about
you're listening.
It.
I loved Mad Men at first, and now it's Dallas.
Karen said it got better, though. Like, she said, like, it went through a down spot, and now it's better, so.
Karen, come back on the show.
If you have faith in Karen.
Well, I'm calling it right now. When Mad Men ends, we should do a show. We should do a segment about it. But okay, but this segment.
You mean I'm going to have to watch it now?
No. No. You and Clint can be in the back watching old 70s. Other films, I'm just going to throw this out here. Films from the 70s have a different look, too. And it has to do with, like, I'm going to talk about, like, the colors. It has to do with, like, the films or the cameras they were using
that's
at
it.
That
that's
time.
That's just technology.
Yeah. But all the films from the 70s have this, like, particular look.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
I don't know. We should talk about it. We're going to do a 70s film show.
Oh, man. I'm there.
Yeah, I thought you'd go for that.
We could just come in and sit and just say, Bill, go.
That's my decade. I went to see those films at the theater.
So maybe Mad Men, maybe 70s films. That's in the future. So obviously British TV tickles our fancy more than most, but we have broad and wide-ranging interests, right? Wide-ranging interests.
Wide-ranging, yes. So this is Amanda. I've been reading a book, American Sniper, I've kind of been on a non-fic kick here lately, so I've been reading a lot of nonfiction. And I actually saw the author, Chris Kyle, was on Conan one night. And I don't happen to watch Conan all that much anymore, but the one night I watched, he was on. I thought, oh, that sounded interesting. So luckily we have the book, and it was really good. Chris Kyle is a Navy SEAL sniper, and he did two tours in Iraq. He didn't ever go to Afghanistan, but he did go to Iraq for long stretches of time over a 10-year period, end up having the most kills. Like, he's the deadliest sniper in SEAL history. He would say he's not the best. He just happened to be in the right place at the right time to get all these kills. Very interesting read. I'm not really on that big into war books, but there was a lot more of like the mental behavior you have to be a SEAL. The interesting thing is that I'm also reading at the same time I started reading Cryptonomicon by Neal Stephenson, which is also a military book. I didn't really plan to read them, you know, simultaneously, but I don't know if I liked the American Sniper because that I was reading the fiction Stephenson as well, if they kind of complemented each other nicely, which I think that they do. Just a short version, the Cryptonomicon is set in World War II with various groups of people and how they deal with code breaking and like the Enigma code and all that crazy Nazi fun. So if you're looking for just kind of a good read, military interested or not, I would suggest American Sniper. So Crystal, what's on your fancy radar?
Cool. Well, I'm actually reading a pretty groovy book right now. It's The Deep Zone by James M. Tabor. This is his first fiction book. He's written two nonfiction, one on mountaineering disaster on Mount McKinley, and the other is about some cavers going into the deepest caves on the planet, which is kind of related to his fiction book, The Deep Zone. There is some crazy virus that's been unleashed on our military, and it sort of makes me think of Ebola. I mean, you get it, and you're pretty much dead within hours. And our current antibiotics do not do anything to stop this. So there's a group of scientists and cavers that have been brought together to go in this cave in Mexico, like 4 miles down, to get this weird little substance that's down there, and it's supposedly that can destroy any virus. So Tabor's been compared to Michael Crichton. So if you like Michael Crichton novels, I think you're going to dig this one too. And it's the first book I've read in a couple months that I literally am like, darn, when I have to like go to sleep or go to work or eat dinner or whatever. So The Deep Zone, James M. Tabor. So what about you, Bill?
Tickling my fancy. Well, I want to talk about a filmmaker, of course. I've been on the net, and I've been reading, like, on Movie Morlocks and a couple other websites. People are starting to rediscover his work, and I want to talk about him because I've always liked his film. It's Robert Mulligan. He was a director who started out in live television, and through the 60s through the early 90s made pictures. His most popular movie is To Kill a Mockingbird. But everybody knows about that one. Great American classics. But he also just did these other little jewels of films. I know I recommended The Other to you. And that was one of his films. It was his rare foray into horror. What he did best was working with young people, children. There was nobody in his league. Sorry, Francois Truffaut and Steven Spielberg. But he truly had a gift with younger performers. Highly recommend. We have some of his titles. I was checking. We have one of his better titles people don't know about called The Stalking Moon. It was his last collaboration with Gregory Peck, and he also worked with Alan J. Bacola before he became a director himself. But interesting Western, saw a big write-up about it in Film Comment about a year ago, praising it, sort of, like I say, a neglected classic. Another film of his, The Pursuit of Happiness. I just watched one last night called The Nickel Ride. Jason Miller, his only starring role. He played the priest in The Exorcist. Blood Brothers, he got Richard Gere early in his career. And his final film was The Man in the Moon, which he discovered Reese Witherspoon. And got just this wonderfully naturalistic performance out of him. And so just want to recommend, go to Internet Movie Database, look on our website to see if we have his films. They're all rock solid. There's one called Kiss Me Goodbye you can skip, but the rest...
That's my favorite. What do you mean? I love that movie.
The rest are solid films. Highly recommend them. Summer of 42, good stuff.
So Tickling My Fancy is 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James, and I love that this book has become so amazingly popular. And I haven't read it, but some of us have read it. Which one of us have read it?
I'm just about finished.
Yeah.
I've got like 40 more pages.
And
I have read it.
Okay, and...
Not it.
Amanda's denying reading it. But could you tell us its backstory? Because it has a really interesting backstory.
It came... I don't know exactly... It came out a while ago. It started life, actually, as Twilight fan fiction. E.L. James, I believe she's British.
I think she's Australian, but I'll check that.
She's not American.
Keep talking.
Okay. So she had written this rather racy Twilight fan fiction starring Bella and Edward. And we had ordered 2 copies of it here. And I don't remember. It came out like... It's been an ebook for a while. It came out in print form not too long ago. And, you know, I work part-time in an interlibrary loan. And we were getting, like, literally 15 requests a day for this book. And we had 2 copies and they were checked out. So we're like, sorry, checked out. Sorry, checked out. And we have since ordered more. Don't worry. So if you're on hold, you don't have to wait forever and ever. And so we couldn't figure out why, and so I was going online, and it has been on the Today Show, and it was in Entertainment Weekly, has been reviewed, it might have been on the cover of People Magazine, I can't remember. I mean, it had gotten some really big press, and then we found out that it was Twilight fan fiction, and we're like, oh, okay. And apparently enough people had liked it, so a publisher bought it, and then they, finger quotes, converted it. And I can't remember the characters. One, the guy's Christian, right? And he's this older gentleman, and then there's a young ingenue who goes to college, and they fall in love and spend a lot of time together. So, but yeah, it's just been... I think it hit popularity so much in the ebook land because people could read it on their e-readers, and they didn't have to... Nobody could know what they were reading. Yeah, they're like, what are you reading? Oh, nothing. Anna Karenina.
That's actually what I mean. That's why I actually find it fascinating. For one, I'm just fascinated with like fictional worlds, you know, and like fan fiction worlds and like quote unquote canonical worlds, like Paramount controls the Star Trek canon, but then there's other Star Trek stuff. I mean, intellectually, I just think that's really fascinating. But I also think it's interesting that, for one thing, I think we've seen fanfic explode and be really popular in the past, or people from the fanfic world. We've talked about that, like Diana Gabaldon, right? And George R. R. Martin, super popular. They come from this fanfiction world. But here's this idea that, like, actually a piece of fanfiction, right, has actually made it super-duper popular. And I also love that it's an erotica novel, right? But not that, that erotica fiction is new, even though I don't know if erotica usually is, like, the first three on the bestseller
list.
Yeah,
it's not usually so mainstream, I think.
Yeah. But, you know, being a librarian following ebooks for a number of years, even before sort of Kindle caused the tipping point for ebooks, there's always been, erotica has always been the sort of mainstay of electronic books. And it's interesting that what electronic book readers are really into has finally sort of forced its way onto the mainstream.
I think this kind of went backwards. Usually, like, you have the print that becomes the ebook. This time you had the ebook that becomes the print. So,
yeah. So, and I'm surprised too that, does anyone know, like, like Stephanie Meyer hasn't thought about maybe suing someone or anything like that?
I haven't heard anything, and I know that E.L. James just sold the movie rights for $5 million to, I want to say Universal, don't quote me on that, but...
Yes, you're right.
Yeah,
I read that too.
Yeah, so I mean, and nobody said anything about copyright issues or...
So Steven Spielberg's going to direct, right?
Or, that's right.
Right. It's such a really interesting story. And I haven't read it yet, but I heard, too, that it's written badly.
Yeah, I've heard that you get the fan things, like, this is the best book ever. And then, like, the realists are like, this is horrible. Why did I pay whatever I paid for this?
Well, when you read it, you can tell. I mean, supposedly it's been edited, I guess, a little bit. But when you read it, it's insert name. You can tell that fans were reading it knowing that it was Bella and Edward, and they wanted them to have this erotic experience that they didn't have in the Twilight books. But it is poorly written. There's pages of emails back and forth between them, like, later, baby, stuff like that.
Well, that's interesting, because I just read this book, Super Sad True Love Story by Gary Scheidengart, and it was, like, one of the best-reviewed books of last year, and that's all it was basically Facebook messages.
Well, maybe they were more in-depth.
Maybe they were better.
Well, that's been Meg Cabot's genre. I mean, that was the whole Princess Diaries, was that, you know, diary entry, and then it became email stuff.
Sure.
The one thing about this book, reading it, that I appreciate, that it does have a sense of humor about itself. I mean, the characters do. I just remember when she meets his family, Christian's family, and they're at the dinner table, and the sister... talking about school and says, yeah, I hate my teacher, he's a total dominatrix, and she spits out her wine at the men of the table, and there's funny things like that. So it has this sense of humor, but I agree with what you're saying about it, that, you know, it's not for, and there are pages, and I'm thinking, geez, what's with all the emails and stuff?
Right. It's filler.
Well, I guess I
yeah, that's what it's like, filler.
Well, there's part of me that's like, many people think that the Twilight series is written quite bad, right?
Hi.
You know, well, I know, like, of the librarians that I know who are, like, really invested in young adult literature, they really don't like the Twilight series. Yeah. You know, they think it's written poorly. So here's, like, fan fiction of something that was written poorly to begin with, and it's just, like, one step worse. But then it's also, I'm thinking about Super Sad True Love Story. I mean, it's actually like a dystopian satire where people don't read and they don't write anymore. And everything's like hyper, like, pornographied. But it's like, okay, so this is right now. But that seems very sort of classist and snobby. And I don't know if that is a good metaphor. Because I just bring it up, how come if you go to the right school or get the right publisher right, then your book is great. But if you do it a different way, then your book is bad. I actually see that happening a lot with... other books, right? If you're, you know, have the right publisher, then your erotica novel is erotica. But if you have the wrong publisher, then it's just pornography or doesn't count or isn't good. So, But maybe the fact that this book is so popular, you know, those issues will be sort of in the forefront.
The one thing that would intrigue me, you told me that story, and then I happened to be out at a bookstore, and I was looking at the Entertainment Weekly. So I thought, while I'm here, I'll just look at the book. And I went up to the guy, and this is the only time this has ever happened. See, to where you go up to, you ask about a bestseller, we don't have it. We'll be glad to put it on order for you. And they, you know, I've never had that all my years going to bookstores and buying best or whatever the hot. That's never happened. And like I said, I got it on Amazon, and I was looking at it, and I thought, well, why not? It's cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It's cheap. It's, what, $9.95?
I was at Target yesterday, and they don't, I mean, like I said, the shelf, and they had, like, one copy of the second book, but like, everything else was gone. Which,
and that's,
I mean,
amazing.
Target's not a big stock, but.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, I read it as an e-book from the library, and I thought I'd have to wait forever because we only had 8 copies, I think, of the e-book, but I got my hold within a couple weeks, so I guess people are reading it fast.
Well, no big words or anything.
Just skip to the fun parts, right? The next month's show is all erotica for the whole hour.
70.
Yeah.
All right.
All 70s erotica for the whole hour. Okay, I just got told by the censors that we can't do 70s erotica for a whole hour next week, right?
Aww.
Even though it's on the bestseller list, right? But if you want more info, though, about the podcast or any of the programs or books, movies, music, DVDs, YouTube videos we talked about, go to
www.library.nashville.10.org.
Dot org.
So close.
Sorry.
Perfect.
That works.